You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Henry County was once Virginia's industrial powerhouse, and there were always steady blue-collar jobs at the local manufacturing plants. It's now home to several defunct factories and the state's highest unemployment rate. John Bassett, a third-generation furniture manufacturer, has spent more than 40 years dealing with his company's struggles as a result of globalization. But while other larger companies were sending their production overseas, Mr. Bassett was determined to keep his factories in Galax, Virginia, up and running. Beth Macy's new book about him, Factory Man, How One Furniture Maker Battled Offshoring, Stayed Local, and Helped Save an American Town, is published by Little Brown, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Beth Macy to our show today. Hello.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Leonard.
You tell a story of a school teacher pointing to the factory smokestacks and telling her students, if you don't turn your homework in, that's where you'll end up. How much of the local population has worked in the factories over the years?
Oh, in Galax, Virginia, quite a few. And certainly in Henry County, Virginia, a lot of people. In fact, you know, that's one of the bad reps they get is that, you know, they weren't trained to do anything other than this factory work.
They come straight out of high school and go into the factories?
Some of them even drop out and go in earlier. I mean, this is years past. And, you know, some people think the populace was sort of purposely dumbed down so that that was all that they were fit for. But then when all the jobs left in Henry County, half of the workforce was just decimated. Half of the jobs, 19,000 jobs, went away.
Are these union jobs?
No, they're not. This is the right to work South. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they weren't what we would consider great paying jobs, but they were what they had, and they allowed them to, you know, back in the day to come to join the cash economy, and it allowed sharecroppers to get paid for the first time and to send their kids to school and college in some situations.
To some degree, isn't the South, places like Henry County, going through the same sort of thing that New England went through earlier when union jobs were shipped to places like Henry County because of right-to-work laws?
Exactly.
And now China is doing the same thing to these places?
Yes, of course, but John Bassett would say the big difference is, you know, What he was competing against was illegal government subsidies that the Chinese, some of the factories were just government owned, and he was having to compete against unfairly priced or dumped goods.
So let's talk about John Bassett for a moment. How did you meet him? He's John Bassett the third.
His grandfather was one of those Wiley sawmill owners who stole furniture making from the North that you were just talking about.
And his name is on two companies, Bassett Industries and Vaughn Bassett. How did that work out?
Okay, so John Bassett Sr., the guy who started furniture making in Virginia in 1902, he ceded his sons and his sons-in-law's money to create basically Hooker Furniture, Vaughn Bassett Furniture, and that's where John Bassett, that's where he has taken on China from that company today. Stanley Furniture was also started by Old Man Bassett.
And John Bassett III started at Bassett Industries, with the bigger one, and then moved on to Vaughn Bassett because his wife was involved in that company, or his wife's family was involved in that company?
Exactly. When he was born in 1937, the whole town was so excited because finally there was a male heir that was going to be able to take over the company. And after college, he was in the army in Germany for a few years, and he came back, and it was real clear that his older brother-in-law was poised to become the next CEO, and he was really not going to make space for little John, they called him dismissively, in the company.
But then he's then moved to the other company, a smaller company.
After decades of trying to show them that he knew how to run a factory, he finally got fed up. And in kind of one of the climaxes of the book, early on in the book, one of the major scenes, they have this big fight, and he leaves the company to work for Vaughn Bassett and Galax, which is controlled by his wife's family.
Now, why this area for furniture? Is there a lot of wood around?
Yeah, that was the Wiley sawmaker I talked about early on. They came out of the Civil War. They were very cash poor and land rich. And they looked around and they said, what do we have? We have people that are starving and wanting to work, wanting to join the cash economy and the Industrial Revolution. And we have all these free trees on our thousands of acres of property. And we also have the Smith River, which is running through this little town. And so basically, John Bassett Sr. built the first factory in his front yard.
And survived through the Depression?
Survived through the Depression. While a lot of the early furniture companies in North Carolina were closing, he survived during the Depression. And I think this is key, and I think this is a big difference between corporations now. He went, at the time, he had several factories along that Smith River. And instead, he didn't lay one person off. He cut back their hours. But he went to every person working for him, and he said, how many mouths do you have to feed in your family? And he cut back their hours accordingly. He cut their pay and their hours, and he made sure they had enough just barely to eke by. And no one got laid off. And that year at Christmas, instead of bonuses, they got ham.
So he was setting a precedent, in a way, for his heirs. For John, who's trying to keep the company alive today.
Exactly. He lived in the town. He and his co-founder brother lived in matching mansions on the hilltops, and they had long staircases that went down to the factories. And they knew all the people. And one thing John Bassett likes to say today, he said, it's not like somebody on Wall Street picking up the phone saying, close plant number 36 in Alabama. These are people I know. I look them in the eye every day. And if you go through that factory today and you stop and talk to somebody, not just they work there, but their husband works there. Some of their adult children work there.
One of the things I was unaware of was how important the furniture industry was in this country in the past. In the 1960s, the U.S. furniture industry was receiving the third largest share of consumer dollars following housing and the automobile industry.
Yeah. And Bassett Furniture, because they had been so frugal and had been so kind of carefully run during the Depression and during World War II, you know, they made armed truck bodies. When nobody was buying furniture during the war, they made truck bodies for the military instead. And so that when we came out of World War II and started that baby boom, Bassett Furniture was poised to become the largest furniture maker in the world, and it did.
When did we first start seeing significant increases in furniture imports?
Yeah, that really started coming in the 80s. And for years, John's
mostly
father—
China?
No, not early on. It was Hong Kong. It was Taiwan. And not until China really opened up in the 90s and after they joined the WTO did they really, you know, that was it a super big threat. But, you know, early, like in the 60s and the 70s, John talks about his father saying, well, it's never going to get to furniture because it's so heavy and it's so bulky. And, you know, they can do the electronic goods, but it's not going to hit us. And then as soon as the first imported furniture to reach the U.S., they started with the smaller occasional tables, they're called the little side tables. They saw how cheap they were. And then they did chairs and things that could kind of break down and be reassembled once they got here. They saw that they were half the price that they could make them and sell them for.
You're right that the Chinese company Universal Furniture was the first furniture company to ship from Asia to Middle America. Did their furniture look like it could just as easily have been made in Virginia?
It did. Early on, the Taiwanese-owned companies, they had trouble with the finishing. And that's something – it takes lots of coats to make the better-end furniture. And so once the American furniture makers sort of started defensively importing just so that they could kind of compete and stay in the game, and they realized if they were going to import nice imported furniture, they were going to have to send people over there to show them how to do the finishing. And gradually the supply chain just, you know, became over in Asia and we didn't have it here anymore.
And this new furniture was selling for 20 to 30% less.
Exactly.
So since it was pretty much the same craftsmanship equal?
In many cases, yes, eventually.
I mean, you can tell the difference between a cheap suit and a good suit. But with something on this level, are we talking about stuff that looks pretty much the same, whether it's made here or there?
It looked a lot like Bassett Furniture.
In fact, you write about a specific dresser called the Louis Philippe that was coming from Dalian in northeast China. And why was that design significant to John Bassett?
that was the one that was going to take them all down. And John's son, Wyatt, who works with them, said, well, first you kind of dismiss it as an outlier. You say they can't be making money because they actually, they bought that dresser. It was wholesaling for so cheap. They were just like, if this thing goes, it's going to take us all out. They deconstructed it piece by piece. And they compared the prices of the wood and the glue and all the components. And they knew without a doubt that this piece of furniture was being dumped in the American market. So John first sent his son Wyatt and a translator, and then he went himself, and he told his son Wyatt, he said, don't come home until you find it. We have got to find out, because he wanted to use that information, which factory was making that particular dresser. He wanted to use that as ammunition in his fight at the U.S. International Trade Commission.
How were they able to price dump? Was the Chinese government giving them subsidies?
The government was subsidizing. And when John finally met with the owner of the company, he looked him in the eye and he said, close down your factories and put your business entirely in my hands. And he said it very kind of coldly. And, you know, John's like, close down my factories, my grandfather would roll over in his grave. But he said, and it was all translated, but the word that stuck in my mind, because I interviewed the translator who was there, she said the word he used was, we are selling this because our government, and this guy was actually a Communist Party official, he said our government is subsidizing us, and this is the tuition. That was the word that translated. This was the price. We are going to take a loss on this in order to capture your market share. And he just came right out and said it to him.
My guest is Beth Macy, who is a journalist from the area that she is covering in Roanoke, Virginia. She's written a book called Factory Man, How One Furniture Maker Battled Offshoring, Stayed Local, and Helped Save an American Town. It's expensive to ship heavy furniture. Don't American manufacturers have an advantage in speed of delivery, less cost of shipping, customer service?
Exactly. And that was one of the – John likes to find the hole in the defensive end. And so not only did he take on China and win that case, but he said, what can we be doing that's different? And to encourage his workers, you know, he stood on top of the conveyor belt and he said, the Chinese are not super people. They cannot suck the ocean dry. And one of the things that they realized in order to compete is that – they realized they were no longer the low-cost producer. They were close. They had gotten their price way down. But what could they hang their hat on? And they said, we can get it to you fast. And so they invented this new system called Bombasset Express, where they can get you just one or two suits, and they specialize in the mom and pops who can't import in container loads. And they figured out how to get it there within 5 days. And nobody else had ever done that before.
But factories were being closed down. In the end, it looked pretty inevitable that the Chinese were going to take over the market. When did furniture manufacturers first question the legality of the Chinese imports?
Right. So John really pieced it together in 2002, and they actually filed what was at the time the largest anti-dumping petition in the world against China in 2003.
Is dumping illegal?
Dumping is illegal according to the rules of the World Trade Organization, yes.
And China is a signatory to the WTO.
Yes.
Who has the authority to investigate?
That's a really good question. So it's up to the manufacturers themselves to know that there's this act on the books called it's this arcane piece of law called the Tariff Act of 1930. And by the time John and the other people who joined his coalition found out there was this law in the book, and there were trade experts in Washington, lawyers who were dying to take the case on for him, you know, at millions of dollars. And by the time they found it out, it was almost too late, because one of the rules about filing the petition is you have to have 51% of your industry willing to sign on. Well, at that point, almost all of the factories were already importing themselves. They didn't want to join because they would be shooting themselves in the foot.
But he wound up getting 57% of them. But they did wind up, to some degree, shooting themselves in the foot, because the Furniture Retailers of America bought two-page ads that named every company on the petition. They were declaring war.
They all went to war, yes. And a lot of the people that initially signed on the petition dropped out once some of their biggest stores canceled their accounts.
Henry County used to have the largest percentage of manufacturing jobs in the state. Now its unemployment rate is at 13.3%, three times higher than the state average. Is the local government working to bring back manufacturing now that this lawsuit has been decided?
Yes, and they've been working all along. But, you know, one of the things we said, all the politicians told us in the late 90s and the early aughts that if China joins the WTO, eventually it'll be a win-win for everybody because we will be exporting to this growing consumer class in China. And but they never said how long that was going to take. And so you can look at globalization, and I know it's not – I'm not saying in my book that globalization is bad. I've gone to the other side, and I've interviewed those people that are really happy and grateful, and they've seen their lives change for the better. But what we haven't done is we haven't gone back and said, hey, you know, that never really happened, that promise that they said we weren't going to lose jobs. We might be able to get our blue jeans a little bit cheaper and our bedroom suits a little bit cheaper, but what about people in those areas like Henry County that were so impacted hard by trade? It'll be decades before they recover.
A listener asks if American manufacturers are struggling because of big foreign companies like IKEA. I don't know whether – I mean, IKEA is not making furniture, I think, that would look like – John Bassett's furniture.
Right. It's called KD, knockdown furniture. It comes and, you know, we've all tried to struggle with the screwdrivers and the directions.
But globalization has affected that industry in a lot of different ways.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
In fact, one of the things some of the people in his coalition, they tried to take some lessons from IKEA in streamlining their production. They, you know, they stole some ideas from them and tried and made the furniture more efficiently. Yes.
There was a money reward. What did John do with it?
Okay, so Von Bassett was awarded $46 million in duties, and he pumped most of that back into his factory to make it more efficient. It was what was it was the purpose of the law to begin with, was that that money would be used to help save those jobs. But they didn't tell you what exactly you had to do with it. Some of the other companies used it for other things and ended up closing all their factories. He put the money back into his factory and, you know, has the best equipment in the world.
Is business booming for him?
Business is not booming for him. He is still waiting for the U.S. to crawl out of this housing market problem, which he's now saying isn't going to happen until 2017. He's breaking even. He has he's very frugal. He manages the business the way his grandfather managed the business. So he has a balance sheet that's like the Rock of Gibraltar. And he said, you know, he might not be making money every year, but he's keeping these people employed, and he could keep it going for the rest of his life if he wants to.
Beth Macy's book is Factory Man. It is published by Little Brown. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.